go ahead and take a seat. I'm Justin. I get to be one of the pastors here. And I love that we got to sing that new song together, because I love that statement that we got to sing over and over again in there. This repeating phrase that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. And I like singing that phrase again because I see that there's a lot of power in that phrase. That is a life-giving phrase. And I know for some of us, we struggle with the idea of repetition. Because we say, man, how many times are we going to sing this same thing? How many times are we going to say it over and over again? I know that we struggle with repetition because at one point in our lives, we've all struggled with repetition. Because when we were young, mom and dad used to say the exact same thing to us over and over and over again. And if you were anything like me, when I was a teenager and I went out to go driving somewhere, what did mom and dad used to say? Drive carefully. Drive carefully. Drive carefully. Mom, Dad, I get it. I know. I drive carefully, usually. Right? And we struggle with this because they just keep saying the same thing. But they're saying the same thing because it's important. Because they see value in the point of saying drive carefully to you. Because it is so important to them that you are careful and that you are safe. So they repeat themselves. But we struggle with repetition. We struggle with it. Some of you know this. Those people that say the same joke over and over again. Some of you in this room are that person that says the same joke over and over again. I have to admit that I am a little guilty of this because I say the same joke to Lindsay all the time. Because what Lindsay will do is she'll ask me, she'll say, hey, can you take out the garbage? And then I will act like I didn't hear her for a minute. And I'll come over to her and I'll say, hey, you know what? Let me take out the garbage for you. And I'll try and act like I had this great epiphany, you know, like I'm doing something so special for her. Or she'll say, hey, can we clean up this mess before we go, before we leave the house? And again, nothing happened, right? And I show up and I say, hey, I have a great idea. Why don't we clean up this mess right now so that later there's not, you know, it's not waiting for us. Let's take care of it before we go. And she hates when I do that. And so the first time I did it, she laughed. The second time, she chuckled. Now she stares at me. And she just glares right into my soul, right? Because she hates it. Why? Because it's not new. At one point, it was funny. Because it was new. It was unexpected. Now it's not funny anymore. It's the same joke. It's the same thing. And so while we struggle with this idea of repetition, it's exactly what we're going to encounter this morning as we continue our series Contrast, where we look at how God is strikingly different and how He calls us to live a life that is strikingly different. And we're going to be in 1 John chapter 2, and what we see John explaining is, hey, I am telling you the same thing that you have heard before, but I'm telling you again because it's important. And so we're going to be starting in verse 7. Here's what John says. He says, dear friends, I am not writing a new commandment for you. Rather, it is an old one you have heard from the very beginning. This old commandment, to drive carefully. No, he says, to love one another is the same message that you've heard before. He says, there's nothing new here. I'm just telling you again, this commandment, to love one another, this is a commandment that you have heard since you were little. And all of us in this room have heard this message before, to love one another. It doesn't matter if you grew up in the church or not, because you heard that golden rule, to do to others what you would want them to do to you. It's a message that we're familiar with. And we know that John knows that these guys are familiar with it, because look at right here in Matthew 22, what we see is the disciples are asking Jesus, Jesus, if we can understand one thing, if we can get one thing right, what would it be? And Jesus replies, he says, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. He says, this is the first and greatest commandment. And then he says, a second is almost as important. No, he says, it's equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law, the over 600 laws that we base our lives off of, the entire law and all the demands of the prophets are built on these two commandments. And what I want you to notice in your Bibles is that phrase, love your neighbor as yourself, it's in quotes because it's not new. Jesus is quoting Leviticus 19. This comes from generations before. And so when John says, love one another, He's telling them something that they learned as children, as young boys and girls. This is something that you grew up learning, to love one another. He says it's not a new commandment. My clicker's not working. There we go. He says, yet it is also new. What? John, you're not making any sense. You're saying it's old, it's not new. And then you say, yet it is also new. Why is it also new? What we have to realize is that John experienced things that aren't right here in this one letter. We know that John wrote three letters. He wrote 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. Then he wrote Revelation, right? But he also wrote the Gospel of John, which is the stories. It's John's account of Jesus' life and ministry. And so let's go to the Gospel of John to see what John knew that maybe isn't coming up right in this passage. John, in John 13, the Gospel of John, chapter 13, John is with Jesus. Jesus is speaking, and John is writing it down. He's experiencing Jesus' teaching, and he's writing it down, and this is Jesus speaking. He says, so now I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. That's the old commandment, right? We already know that one. But then Jesus puts a twist. He puts a turn onto this. He says, love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other. That wasn't back in Leviticus. That's something new right there. Because Jesus is saying, you need to love like I love. That this is a different kind of love. This is a sacrificial love. This is a love that breaks boundaries. This is a love that comes from a servant's heart and a servant's attitude. It's not just about showing kindness to each other and doing good deeds for each other and that we say that that's love. He says, I want you to love the way that you have seen me love. And now this very old commandment has become new. Jesus says, when you love in that way, he says, your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. That something will be strikingly different about you. And it's not just that someone sees you and they say, hey, there's something there. Jesus says, it will prove that you are my followers. That your love speaks volumes to others. Go a couple chapters before that, three chapters before that. And Jesus says, don't believe me unless I carry out my Father's work. He says, what I am doing, what I'm saying doesn't mean anything unless you see the love that's coming from me. He says, if I do his work, if I do my Father's work, believe in the evidence of the miraculous works I have done, even if you don't believe me. He says, it might be really hard for you to believe what I'm saying and what I'm telling you. That might be a step too far for you. He says, but if you can see the way that I am doing what my Father wants me to do, if you are seeing that I'm loving the way that my Father loves you, he says, then you will know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father. Jesus is saying your love means something. Sometimes we fall into this trap of just saying that, hey, we're going to love, and that just means that we're going to be nice to everyone. Jesus is saying, no, your love is so much more than being nice. Your love is conveying a statement. Your love is telling a story. It's telling the story of who Jesus is in your life and what he's done. And your love will speak volumes to people. So John says, it might be an old commandment, yet it's also new. And then he says, Jesus lived the truth of this commandment, and you also are living it. For the darkness is disappearing, and the true light is already shining. And here's where John pulls in this idea of contrast, right? The light and the darkness. Two contrasting sides. Two sides that are different from each other. And he says, Jesus lived out the truth of this commandment, to love one another, so that the light could be shown. Our Muslim friends, I think they would benefit from being able to see their God live out the truth of this commandment. See, they don't have what we have. See, God himself came down to this earth to live a life filled with love. But for them, Allah is complete. He has no desire to be with his people. And so they never got love demonstrated from them because there's no need for it to happen. Where Jesus came and put himself right among us so that he could demonstrate love in a personal and relational way. And so we see all this turmoil in the news between two sides. But if they saw the boundary-breaking love of Jesus, maybe there wouldn't be that stark contrast in their faith. For our friends that are Jehovah's Witness, they have this same verse in their Bible. But it doesn't carry the weight that it carries for you and me. Because they only believe that Jesus is merely the Son of God. Not God himself, not the God Jesus. And so for you and me, this statement carries weight. This statement is important because it says that God put himself right among his people to demonstrate his love. For them, it merely says that the Son of God came here. A man just like you and me. Maybe one who's a little more holy than us. But we can love each other. But to have God himself demonstrate that kind of love brings a whole new meaning in life to what John is saying here. Jesus lived the truth of this commandment. And here's just some of the examples from John's gospel, because we're talking about John, so here's his perspective. Here's just some of the examples of where we see Jesus living the truth of this commandment with his followers, that Jesus invited the disciples into his ministry. He could have done it on his own. He could have chosen not to have anyone else involved, but he wanted relationship. He wanted people there with him, that Jesus cared for Mary and Martha, and that he brought Lazarus back from the dead. Why? Because Jesus wept with those who wept, and he rejoiced with those who rejoiced. He went through life with people. Saw that Jesus washed the disciples' feet. He loved them so much that he got on his knees and out of a servant's heart, he washed their feet. And he prayed for those disciples. He could have easily had not have done anything there. He could have just talked to God about what was going on with him, but he didn't. He brought his friends, he brought the people that he loved into his conversation with his Father, with God. And then we saw that Jesus restores Peter, even though Peter denied him. And I don't know about you, but I know for me, if someone says, hey, I don't want anything to do with you, I say, okay, that's fine. You go your way, I'll go my way. Jesus didn't respond that way. He came back after Peter. He sat down with them, and they expressed their love for each other. Jesus lived the truth of that commandment to love each other. And John goes on, and he contrasts the way that Jesus lives versus the way that we live. And here's what he says. If anyone claims, I am living in the light, but hates a fellow believer, that person is still living in darkness. He says, if you are going around saying, I'm a Christian, I'm a Christ follower, I love everybody, but there's still someone, there's another person, and maybe someone right here in this room or this church or in another church that you hate. He says, you are fooling yourself. And let's be clear here that Jesus never condones hate. So even though this is written to believers about other believers, Jesus never, ever condones hate. He tells us to love our enemies. Paul tells us if someone does something bad to you, that you pay them back with love. But Jesus says if you are going around and saying that you love everyone, and then you have hate, you're harboring hate in your heart for someone else. He says you're fooling yourself. You're not living in the light. Why? Because you have not fully experienced the freedom, that freedom that we just sang about. You have not fully experienced that freedom in Jesus. Because you are still tied to your disagreement, to your animosity towards someone else. And so because of that, you are stuck in the darkness. He contrasts that thought of hating someone else, and he says anyone who loves a fellow believer is in the light. And look at this. This phrase is so key, that they do not cause others to stumble. Our arguments and our disagreements with other people can cause people to stumble. And sometimes we do it within the church, and because it looks like a power play, it looks like a power struggle of who can get what. And people that are looking say, I don't need any part of that. I already have that at work. Why do I want to come to a church and see people argue over power? When it has nothing to do with that, but that's what That's what we do. But it can also happen to that person who doesn't know Jesus yet. Someone who hasn't put their trust in Jesus. And they see our posture. They see how argumentative we are. They see the hate that we have for each other, or the disagreements that we have with each other. And it causes other people to stumble. And I know that this is true because this happened to me when I was 8 years old. I can remember it clear as day. I remember my dad was away at work. And we went to church like we would any other Sunday. And we always sat with my parents' best friends and their family. And I was sitting in the pew, and I was in between my mom and my dad's best friend. And I was probably drawing on the bulletin or something like that. And I remember, well, I don't remember this, but the pastor said something inappropriate, something hurtful. It's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. But what was more unfortunate was how that church responded. And I can remember as an 8-year-old, people standing up and yelling back at this pastor. And I can remember clear as day, I will never forget this moment, that my dad's best friend stood up next to me and I looked up at him and he yelled back. He said, "No, you listen." And he went on to say more that I don't remember. But as an 8-year-old, I made a very intentional and active decision in that moment. That whatever my parents were experiencing at their church, whatever interested them to go there, whatever they thought they were a part of, I wanted nothing to do with it. And in that moment, I made the decision to close God and Jesus out of my life until about another 8 years later. And I would say it was an appropriate decision based on what I experienced, what I saw. Your actions, your hate for someone else, your anger for someone else will cause other people to stumble in their faith. And you might say, "Hey, I would never stand up in a church and yell back. I'm not that kind of person." That's okay. There are other areas where your hate and your argumentative nature and your struggle with someone else will cause others to stumble. See, sometimes we like to use this really nice word, venting. And we vent on our way home from church when we're really just talking trash about somebody else. And we think that our kids aren't listening in the back. But maybe they are. And maybe they're hearing how much you can't stand someone else, how much you can't stand being around them. In that moment, you can be causing your kids to stumble. Maybe it's a conversation that you are having with someone else and you don't even think anyone else is a part of it, but they are watching you from across the room and your body language is screaming to them. It's screaming hate and anger and frustration, and they're saying, "Hey, whatever those guys got going on at their church, I don't need to be a part of it." Your anger, your hate will cause other people to stumble. That's why we have to be so careful at how we're living our lives. We have to be so careful about what we are portraying to other people. That we are living this love that Jesus already demonstrated for us. That's why I love getting to partner with people like Jess Pacillo and Karenette. Because they are going into situations where people are just hurting and they're struggling. And they're there to show love. They're there to be able to come right alongside someone else. And so as these women face unexpected and unwanted pregnancies, they're there to show love throughout the way. So we welcome Jess for me, and we'll hear her story of how CareNet is partnering with these women and coming alongside them.
Good morning. I work for CareNet, and we are being the hands and feet of Jesus. We are coming alongside and loving these women as Jesus would want us to be loving these women. What are we doing? We're saving the babies, we're saving the moms, and we are healing the community. How are we doing that? We're saving the babies by offering these moms the services that they need to choose life for their children. They need to know if they're pregnant pregnancy is viable, if they are pregnant, and if they have an STD. And we're able to offer all of those services to our patients for free. Sometimes multiple ultrasounds are needed to help these moms choose life and see what's actually happening inside of their bodies. We're saving the moms by offering the gospel to these women in the middle of their medical appointment. Yes, that seems incredibly odd. However, these women want to know this God who claims to love them, because nobody in their life, and I'm sorry to say this, but a lot of times any male figures in their life are not loving them the way that they need to be loved. As we all know, only Jesus can love us that way. But we have shared the gospel with over 400 women since January of 2016 when we kicked this program off. And since then, 185 women have said yes to Christ. That's an amazing number. And of all the patients that we've seen over that many, but 206 babies have been saved, are born, or in the process of waiting to have their birthday. So I just want to share a little story of one woman, in particularly, actually. I was telling earlier in the first service, we've seen a rash of twins this month, like three sets already in March. It's been amazing. But it's amazing to see that these siblings are saving each other at the moment of conception. Because when these women come in, they're planning to go right down the street to Planned Parenthood or in Warwick or the other various clinics that we have. But when they come in and they see two on a screen, as plain as day, 13 weeks, fully formed babies, they say, wow, this changes everything. These kids are saving their brothers or their sisters from utero. Guys, it's amazing to watch this stuff. And we're healing the community by offering women Bible studies and men too who've made the choice for abortion in the past, 20, 30, 50 years ago, or maybe last week. And we're also offering studies for women who deal with difficult issues of sexual abuse, misuse, and you name it. We're offering studies to help that. And let me tell you, I have led some of these studies. It has been amazing to watch God's hand work through these weeks of this study and the miracle that happens in each one of these lives. It's amazing. So we need you guys to help us. How? We're asking that you pick up a baby bottle, that you fill it with your change, your coins, your checks, and bring it back to us at the end of April. We're doing this because these women come to us because our services are free. All of our funding is private funds from all of our donors. So we're asking you to come alongside with us. There's multiple ways for you guys to volunteer, pray for us, come check the center out. I'll be in the back. I'd love to listen to you guys. Come meet me. Come talk to me. I'll answer any of your questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. So in your bulletin, there's a bookmark in there that's from CareNet, and there's a list of ways that you can be praying, one way each day that you can be praying to partner with CareNet as they take these next steps in their journey of their ministry. So we would encourage you to put that in your Bible, put it somewhere that you're going to see it each and every day, and be praying alongside CareNet as they try and serve these women as best as they can. And so we love, you know, getting to partner with them because they do. They care about people, and they, just like we saw Jesus lived out the truth of this commandment to love one another, they live out that commandment. They love one another. And so but one thing that I love about CareNet, and this is something that's so important for all of us, is that in any situation, that we need to live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone. And so as we try and love one another, as we try and love those people around us, we have to understand that we need to be receiving to them, that we need to make the most of our opportunities. And so when we disagree with someone, when we come up to that point where we say, hey, we're different from each other, how do we actually talk to that person? Well, Paul says that the way that we talk to them should be gracious and attractive. And when we have a gracious conversation, that means that we're giving in that conversation. That means that we're listening to what you say, and not just listening so I can wait to get to my turn, but I'm listening so that way I'm actually hearing and feeling what it is that you're going through. And he says, why? He says, so that you can have the right response for everyone. Because when we don't listen, when we're not gracious in our conversation, when we're looking to just tell someone how wrong they are, you all know what that's like. If someone comes up and says, Justin, you're wrong, this way, boom, 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 I say, goodbye. You know, I don't want anything to do with you. Because all you're trying to do is knock me down. Paul says, if you are gracious in your conversation, if you are speaking in an attractive way in your conversation, it will give you the opportunity to, because you're listening and you're actually hearing where these people are at, to have the right response for them. And so as we go to love one another, we have to hold on to that. Let's wrap up in John. And here's what John says. He says, anyone who hates a fellow believer is still living and walking in darkness. Such a person does not know the way to go, having been blinded by the darkness. He says, if you are holding on to this hate, it's blinding you to everything else going on. And what happens sometimes is that hate starts as a seed. It starts as something very small. And it grows, and it becomes more and more noticeable. And I think any of you who have ever had hate for someone else, you know that you don't like that feeling. It doesn't feel good. It feels wrong to have that feeling of hate towards someone else. John says you can't just dodge it. You can't just walk away from it. But you need to remove it from your life. If you try and work around it, you are blind, and you're not going to be able to find your way out. You're not going to be able to find your difference. And so what that might mean is that you have to go back and figure out what that small seed was that started your hate. When I was in sixth grade, Matt Reynolds hated me, and I hated Matt Reynolds. And all of our friends knew it. And they egged us on into this argument, into this battle. We were arch enemies. And one day it was decided, we didn't decide this, but it was just decided that between fourth and fifth period, we were going to go meet at our lockers, and it was about to go down. And I remember we both showed up, we were toe-to-toe, ready to fight each other. We stopped. And I said, hey, why do we hate each other? He says, I don't know. He says, you want to be friends? I said, sure. And from that day on until the day that we graduated high school, Matt Reynolds and I had a great friendship. But there was a seed of hate somewhere in there that grew, that festered, and turned into something where we became blind to what reality was. I wonder about you. If there's a seed of hate somewhere that has blinded you to your relationship with someone else. It's blinded you to what Jesus would really want for your life. If you can walk away with one idea, one big point this morning, one thought that will just carry you through this week, can you walk away with this? To love one another. To love one another in just the way that Jesus loved you. That it would be a sacrificial, boundary-breaking, servant's heart type of love. Can we love each other right in this room and right in this church, but can we carry that love out to our workplaces, into our schools, and into our neighborhoods, and into our families, and to love each other just the way that Jesus loved us? And if we can do that as a church, can we walk through these next steps together? To see what are some steps that we can take. So will everyone take out your bulletins, take out your connection cards. We're going to walk through these together. There's only two of them this morning, but we're going to walk through these together to see how we can better love one another. And the first next step says, I am choosing to live my life in God's light and will cut the tension between light and darkness with love. That as you live your life, there is going to be this point of contrast with you and someone else where you are strikingly different from the person on the other side. And sometimes we approach that point of contrast trying to act really tough with a really firm posture, and there becomes a lot of tension there. What I'm asking you is, will you cut that tension and just show love? You know, as I was writing that this week, I just started laughing because I started imagining, what if Jesus came to that point of contrast, that line of contrast, that line of light and darkness, and he looked on the other side and he saw me there and he said, Justin, there's no way. It's not possible. Because I know the things that you've done. I know what you've thought in your life. I know what you're thinking right now. I know the habits that you find yourself in. Justin, there's not a possibility. It's too much. I just start laughing. Because I said, there's no way that Jesus would ever do that. Because Jesus pushed right through that point of contrast, right through that line drawn in the sand. And he went into the darkness to bring the light there to show his love for me and for you. What I'm asking you is, can we love that way? That boundary-breaking way? Because we say that we love everyone, but do our actions really show it? Do the way that we live our lives really truly show that we have love for everyone, that there's no one that's too dirty or too different or too weird or too awkward or too looking this way or that way? Do our actions actually show that we are ready to break the boundaries? Paul says that Jesus came to break the walls of hostility. Are we loving in that way? And I'm hoping that you'll take that step and you will cut that tension between strikingly different sides with love. Our other next step is that I'm currently living in darkness because my hate for another person is clouding my ability to follow Jesus. Pray for me as I work to make my relationship right with God. And maybe that's where you're at. You have that seed of hate inside of you, and you've let it grow. And now you're becoming blind to everything that's around you. What I'm asking you is, would you remove that hate from your life? Would you do the work that it takes? And it does take work, because you might have to have a really uncomfortable, awkward conversation with someone. You might need to own something that you did wrong that you know was right and you don't think it was really that wrong, but you're going to need to own it anyways and say, I'm sorry. Not I'm sorry because, not I'm sorry but simply, I'm sorry. Maybe you're even going to need to take the step of putting yourself into counseling, which is a good thing. It's a great thing, because you are working towards and seeking the help of someone else to be able to get yourself out of this place of hate, to remove this seed of hate, so that you can restore your relationship with this person and with God. You know, that's why when we take communion here, we ask you to think about your vertical relationship with God, but your horizontal relationships with the people around you as well. Will you remove those seeds of hate? And if that's you, would you put your name down on the connection card? Because our team wants to pray for you this week, because we know that is a hard step to take. Let me pray for you. Jesus, thank you for how you demonstrated love to us, that you lived out the truth of this commandment to love one another. And you gave us a whole new example of what love means. Jesus, help us as we look each day this week. Would you show us that one person that we can demonstrate your love to each and every day? And Jesus, we're asking that we would take advantage of those opportunities, and that we would love, and that our love would prove to our neighbors, it would prove to our coworkers, it would prove to our schools that we are your followers. Jesus, we love you. Thank you. We pray this in your name. Amen.